Today's episode of the Axial Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Get access to over 25,000 classes in design, business, and more absolutely free for 2 months. Just visit skillshare.com/AC. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axial Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So we live in an age of, I guess, what we could probably call digital maximalism, right? More is better. More information, more connectivity, more apps, more ways of intersecting with the lives of other people. It just continues to grow and grow and become more and more intrusive in our lives. And listen, there are a lot of great things that technology can do for us. I believe that technology is an extension of our capacity to accomplish our will. And that's a wonderful thing because it gives us a longer lever when we want to accomplish something. But at the same time, technology can also begin to infiltrate our lives in ways that prevent us from thinking deeply, from connecting dots, from doing the important creative work that we're tasked with doing. Well, today's guest knows this all too well. His name is Cal Newport. He's a professor. He's also an author of a new book called Digital Minimalism. And on this episode, we're going to talk about what technology is doing to us, to our creative capacity, to our ability to actually focus on the important work in the relationships that we want to grow and to build, and what we can do about it. Before we dive into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So I just mentioned some of the ways that technology can inhibit us, right? Can get in the way of us accomplishing our important work or achieving our goals. Skillshare is a technology that actually helps you enhance your capacity to accomplish your goals, to tackle those goals. Skillshare is an online learning platform that helps you learn new skills that you can apply to your life, to your work, to your career, to help you grow your skill set and also to grow in your capacity to add value to your organization or to your clients and grow in your career. Or frankly, just to improve your life satisfaction. A lot of research shows that developing skills has a significant impact on life satisfaction. Skillshare is an online learning community for creators with more than 25,000 classes in design, business, and more. You're going to discover countless ways to fuel your curiosity, your creativity, and your career. You can take classes in social media marketing, mobile photography, writing, even illustration. And so whether you're looking to discover a new passion, you want to start a side hustle, which I know many of us probably want to do, but we just don't know where to start. You want to gain new professional skills. Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. I'm telling you, friends, if you want to continue up the growth curve, you need to develop new skills. You can't rely on yesterday's skills to tackle tomorrow's problems. You need to commit yourself to regular growth and development, which means deep work, as Cal talks about frequently, Cal Newport, our guest today, deep work, which is immersing yourself in trying difficult things, in thinking deeply, in learning new skills, in developing your capacity. That's what Skillshare will help you do. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Axial Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months absolutely free. Absolutely free. Try it for 2 months. What do you have to lose? All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to gain access to over 25,000 classes to help you knock it out of the park in 2019. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Axial Creative Podcast. Well, our guest today is Cal Newport. Cal is the author of a new book called Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. Cal, welcome to the Axial Creative Podcast.
Todd, thanks for having me back on.
Well, you are one of my favorite guests. Every time you write a book and I read, I know the first time this happened was I was on my way to Istanbul to speak, and I read in one sitting, I read So Good They Can't Ignore You and on the plane, and I just thought, oh, that's the perfect book for this time. And then I remember when Deep Work came out and I read it again in one sitting, and I just thought, this is the perfect book for this time. And now your new book, Digital Minimalism, once again, I read it and I thought, oh my goodness, there is not a more perfect time for this book. You just have a knack, Cal, for writing books that are just timed perfectly. But this isn't, this book, Digital Minimalism, is not something that just, you know, you decided on a lark to write. I mean, I know you've been beating this drum for quite a while. So I want to kind of back up and ask you just from the start, you know, how did we get to this place where we need to start talking about digital minimalism. How did we get here culturally?
We got here relatively recently. I mean, this seems to be what I've observed interacting with my audience and being someone who's out there pretty publicly talking about technology, talking about the way technology intersects with culture. I write a lot about this. I talk a lot about this. So I hear from a lot of people. And I noticed a shift that began to happen maybe about 2 years ago, right? So if you go back to maybe 2015, 2014, people are still talking about the role of technology in their personal lives through a lens of self-deprecation. Oh, I spend too much time on my phone. I'm addicted to Facebook. But ultimately, not with that much concern. It just is, maybe I have some bad habits to clean up here, but, you know, why is this Cal Newport guy bothering me so much about social media? And then there was a shift. The shift happened around 2016. I think in part what happened is the dynamics of the U.S. presidential election put people in a mindset where they were willing to think about things like social media through a critical lens. And then once you open that door, it lets in a lot of new thinking about it. But there was this shift where people started to think more critically, and they began to realize something has transformed here, that the technologies of my personal life have shifted from, you know, something I really enjoy but maybe have some bad habits around, to something that's starting to sap my autonomy as a human being. Mm. And it went from this notion of, you know, isn't it funny how much we're on our screens, to it's really not funny at all what I'm starting to miss out on in life. And I really noticed this fundamental shift the last couple of years where people are starting to get fed up. They feel like they're losing autonomy in the sense that they're spending so much time looking at these screens, so much more time than they know is useful or they know is helpful, that it's really starting to take them away from things they know are much more valuable. Time with their kids, high quality leisure, with their friends, these things they know are valuable. They're spending less and less time on that, more and more time on the screens. And there's this sense of manipulation. How they feel, you know, what actions they take, what they believe about things is increasingly being pushed around by apps and sites and services coming through these screens. So there's definitely, it's a long answer to a short question, but there's definitely been a change in the last couple of years where people really are starting to feel like they have to take serious action. That this is no longer just kids these days. It's something's got to change.
Well, I think most of us know this. We recognize these patterns in our own behavior, and yet we don't change them. And you introduce a word in the early part of the book that I found really interesting. You talk about addiction. And I think recognizing a pattern that needs to change and being unable, fundamentally unable to change that pattern, I think that is the very definition of addiction, don't you think?
Yeah, I looked into this deeply. So I really wanted to understand what was going on psychologically. Why do we look at screens more than we know is useful or healthy? And there is addiction going on. It's important to get the terminology right. So I spent some time diving into the psychological literature on addiction, trying to understand this better. And there's different types of addiction, right? So the type we're more comfortable with, or we're more familiar with, I should say, are sort of strong chemical dependencies. Mm-hmm. So if you're addicted to smoking or opiates or alcohol, these can be very, very strong addictions. They can really push you to do actions, activities that you know are not in your best interest. And you have actual strong physical withdrawal symptoms if you take yourself away from these substances. But there's another type of addiction out there called moderate behavioral addiction. And these are addictions that are not connected to a particular substance that you're ingesting into your body that's changing your brain state. It's behavioral. Gambling addiction was one of the first sort of famous, well-documented behavioral addictions. But then internet addiction was the second. And so a moderate behavioral addiction is something where if I took it away from you, you're not going to Jones necessarily or have a strong withdrawal, right? If I take you off Facebook, you're not going to sneak out in the middle of the night to try to get to an internet cafe to log into Facebook. But if you have access to it, it's very hard to consistently resist. And this seems to be where a lot of these services are. It's the same thing with junk food, right? Like imagine, you know, it's very hard when you're at work and someone puts out the tray of donuts. It can be very hard to go all day without eating one of those donuts. And if you have those donuts with you in your pocket all day long, you're going to end up eating a lot more donuts than you probably should. That's what's going on here, is that you can take someone off a lot of these tools. They'll be okay. But if you give someone access to these tools at all times in their pocket, they're going to have a very hard time moderating how much they use them.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about the three principles of digital minimalism. Before we do, what is digital minimalism? Could you define that phrase for us?
Right. So what I noticed is, you know, people are fed up. They want serious change. And what was not working for people was assorted tips and tricks. So this idea that, oh, I'll just read some article, you know, on Lifehack or something, you know, turn off your notifications, or why don't you try, you know, take a digital Shabbat every Saturday. These sort of tips and tricks are not enough. The forces were too powerful. So my solution is that we actually need a philosophy, right? If you want to take back control of your life from these digital tools, put them back in their place, make them support you instead of being the center of your life, you need a philosophy of technology use, something that's completely internally consistent and that's built on your deepest values. Just like in fitness or food, it's not enough to just say, I'm going to try to eat more healthy. It's usually more powerful if you say, you know, I'm paleo, right? You have a whole philosophy and lifestyle. This is how I approach food and fitness or what have you. And so digital minimalism is essentially one of the first fully articulated philosophies of technology use. And its basic idea is start with what you really value. What do you really value in your life? What's important to you? Then for each of those things, ask, what is the best way, if any, to use technology to support this value? And then let the answer to those questions be basically the only technology you use in your personal life. Hmm. So it's very intentional. You use technology much more sparingly than most people. And when you use it to specifically support or boost something that you think is really important in your life. And so a digital minimalist spends much less time staring at their screens than most people. This might make them seem weird, but the digital minimalist thing is everyone else who's weird. The digital minimalist idea that you're looking at your screen at every moment, that you can't watch, you know, be anywhere without also having a screen going on. You can't watch TV without also having a tablet and a phone. Like, this is actually what's weird. We just don't realize it. So it's an intentional philosophy of technology use where you put it to work intentionally and sparingly to support the things you value.
Yeah. So let's talk about the principles of digital minimalism. So I can remember, I think I'm about 10 years older than you, I think, based on what I can ascertain. I'm in my mid-40s. And I can remember a time, even in the marketplace, where, I mean, obviously we didn't have phones that we were glued to 24/7. I remember how skeptical people were when email was available on smartphones, right? Just email alone, and how skeptical people were and how they thought, oh, this is going to ruin my life. I can't believe they're making me carry this phone with me everywhere and check my email 24/7. There was a lot of skepticism about this at the beginning. And then it just became adopted behavior. And it's hard to believe this is only about 10 years old, right? A lot of these behaviors are only about a decade old. And yet it seems like to my teenage children, I mean, it seems like, you know, this is the way things have always been. I mean, we're just adapting so quickly. So the first principle of digital minimalism is clutter is costly. What do you mean by this?
So the opposite of minimalism is maximalism, which is the mindset that if something offers some value, you should probably do it. And the way a maximalist thinks about the world is, okay, if I don't do this thing, like sign up for this service or look at this site or buy this device that offers me some value, it's as if I'm losing that value, as if someone's taking that value out of my pocket. And so the maximalist mindset is bring into your life as many things that might bring you value as possible. The minimalists say, wait a second, there's a cost. There's a cost to bringing things into your life. And when you really clutter up your life with a lot of things, that clutter, the negative impact of that clutter can far swamp the individual benefits that each of these things brings you in isolation. So when it comes to physical possessions, we're very familiar with this, right? If you clutter your house full of lots and lots of junk, if you're a hoarder, let's say, it's true that the hoarder can go to everything on their shelf and everything piled in the basement and in isolation say, well, here's why I have this old newspaper, because I might need it for this. And here's why I have this old birdhouse, because, you know, I was thinking one day I might, you know, there's value for everything they have. But the psychic weight of having their house be full of junk is way, way more negative than the sum of all the positive things. Well, the same thing's going on in your digital life. So I think people in the excitement around a lot of these technologies being new, especially personal technologies in the last 10 years, adopted anything and everything that seemed interesting or cool or potentially had some value. And they didn't weigh, well, what's the cost of having so many different things that are pulling insistently at your attention? And so the negative cost of having all this digital clutter in your life can far outweigh the sum of the individual benefits. And it's something that we don't care enough about often in our culture. But it's an age-old idea. I mean, I go back to Thoreau. Thoreau was really big on this. He was really big on, okay, you get this value out of this possession, but how much of your life did you have to spend in order to trade for that possession? And Walden, Thoreau goes to these economics that are really, really interesting. And so it's an old idea. But there's a cost to anything you bring into your life. And this is very true in the digital world. And so the first point of minimalism is that clutter is costly. Actually, taking things out of your life that in theory offer you a little bit of value can actually make your life better. And so it sounds paradoxical, but it's kind of key to minimalism.
No, I think it's really a valuable principle. I think sometimes we don't recognize that in the digital realm because it's invisible, right? We don't see the clutter. I think if you walk into a cluttered house, I think you start to feel a little bit claustrophobic. But I think if you know, you don't realize how quickly you can strangle your digital life, your mental life, your emotional life, you know, how easily you can be encroached upon by all of these things that you're inviting in. So the second principle is optimization is important. What do you mean by optimization?
So another thing digital minimalists do is they move beyond just the binary question of which technology do I use? So they don't just say, do I use Facebook or do I not use Facebook? Once they decide to use a technology, they also answer the question of how and when. So they want to be optimal in how they use the technology. Mm-hmm. So they say, okay, well, what specifically am I going to use Facebook for? What's the specific big win I want to get out of Facebook? Okay, and then when am I going to do that? And so a digital minimalist might say, Facebook is really important because this local group I belong to uses a Facebook group to organize. And that's where I find out about upcoming events and where we have discussion in between meetings. And this group is really important to me, and so this is why I need to be on Facebook. But the minimalist will say, that doesn't just give me license to spend 2 hours a day idly swiping through Facebook on my phone. How and when am I going to use it? And so in that example, a minimalist might say, okay, well, I don't need it on my phone. I'm only going to access Facebook on my desktop computer, and I'm going to do it twice a week. Twice a week, I'm going to check in to see what's going on with my group and make sure that I'm up to date. Not just the what. And there's huge benefits, huge, your sort of pro cons, your net benefit and cost equation falls decidedly in your advantage once you start how you use technologies and not just thinking about which ones you use.
Yeah. That's so valuable. And by the way, that is Facebook's worst nightmare, right? Is to have a lot of people who are not fully engaged, but are using it very strategically. So the third principle is that intentionality is satisfying. And you shared a little bit about that. I love this Amish phrase that you share in the book, that intention trumps convenience. I think that's so fantastic. So could you talk a little about intentionality?
There's huge value in intentional living, which means you're clear on what you value, and you make strong choices about what you do in your life to serve those values. And something we've just known throughout the historical record, I mean, this is not a new idea, is that there's huge power in being intentional. And the benefits you get in terms of meeting a satisfaction for being intentional about how you live almost always far outweighs whatever conveniences you might lose out to serve those intentions. So the extreme example of this is the old order Amish, who have these really clear value based around community and what supports the community. And so they make every decision about technology based around that principle. Will this bring our community together, or will this push our community apart? Like, that's their key intention. That's what their whole order is built around. And technology. That's why they might have solar panels and diesel generators, because electricity by itself doesn't bring their community apart, but they won't connect to the grid, because to be connected to the outside seems to diminish the sense of insular community. Or why they have tractors, but they won't have cars, because if you have a car, it's too easy to leave and go places on the weekends and the community is going to come apart. The Amish have lots of inconveniences, right? To serve this intentionality, they don't use lots of technologies that are incredibly convenient. But this is an order that survived against all odds. It really should have dissipated. I mean, this is literally in the sort of the center of the wealthiest, most advanced country in the world, with every convenience and technology that you can imagine. That this has survived for 200 years is really surprising. And it's in part because there's great meaning and satisfaction that comes from serving intention. And that can trump the inconvenience of not being on the grid or not having a car. And so I really emphasize that point to get people out of the mindset of, well, wait a second, if I'm not using this tool, I can think of some things would be inconvenient. And saying that's true, but those inconveniences aren't as big of a deal as you think. And the meaning and jolt of satisfaction you get out of being very intentional about what you do can far outweigh that. And so that's another reason why minimalists often are pretty happy and pretty satisfied, is because they get the buzz of, I am in control of how I live and I know why I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, we have only covered about the first third of the book. The entire back half of the book is really about practices that people can build into their life. But I will say this, the digital declutter process that you walk people through is worth the book alone. Like, just that process is so valuable. Just by way of kind of closing off our conversation, if there was, you know, something, one thing that you would encourage people to do right now as a next step, you know, stop listening to this episode and go do this thing to begin to take a more minimalist approach to their technology, what would you advise people to do?
Well, I'll give you the bold answer and the timid answer. So if you're looking to be bold, do a digital declutter, right? This is the key idea of how to transition into digital minimalism. You wipe the slate clean. 30 days, you get all optional personal technology out of your life. No social media, no news online, no video games, no streaming media out of your life. You wipe the slate clean. At the end of the 30 days, you make all of those tools that earn their way back into your life. So you're from a clean slate. The Instagram, the Snapchat, the Facebook, the Twitter, all the things, it's all wiped clean. And then for any of those tools to get back into your life, it has to earn its way back in. Dumb down your phone. Take all the social media off your phone. I've had readers who have to take the web browser off of their phone. Take the email off your phone if you can all get away with it with your job, which a lot of people can, even though it's less convenient. Make the phone back to what it used to be, a real iPod and a really good phone and a way to get directions and maybe see if it's about to rain, right? Just by dumbing down your phone, you'd be surprised by how much breathing room that simple change gives you in your life. And that's a great first step towards starting to regain what you spend your time and attention on, regain control of that, and head down towards a more minimalist path.
That's great. Well, Cal Newport is the author of Digital Minimalism, Choosing a Focused Life in a Noisy World. Cal, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Thanks, Todd.
Well, many thanks to Cal Newport. If you want to know more, you can visit calnewport.com, or the book is available anywhere books are sold. Also, join the conversation at The Collective, collective.accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.